You, Chuck, pulled off something that's nearly impossible to do in any industry. You left Shoko. You started a company in your former employer's backyard and seemingly a direct competitor. Now, in any other universe, you'd be an infidel and a mortal enemy.
Oh, I was.
Well, you must. What changed then? Because it appeared that your offshoot, this Crossroads Audio offshoot, and Shoko coexisted somehow for decades, and your esteem is just as high now with all of your former Shoko co-workers and peers. And I marvel at that. And so what was the business plan, and how did you manage to pull it off?
Business plan?
Yeah. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
Yeah. I was hanging in there until you said business plan. We don't need no stinking business plan. Actually, it really had to do with Rare Earth. They put us on their rider that the audio had to be by Crossroads Audio, period.
No kidding.
No, that's
seriously?
Seriously, that was it. So we did a year or so of touring with them until they kind of fell out of popularity. But in the interim, Steely Dan and the Doobie Brothers were typical opening acts for them.
Oh, wow.
I mean, one of the best shows I ever did, rock and roll shows anyway, was in, of all places, Amarillo, in the convention center there.
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw, yeah, goat roping special place. Actually, it was nice enough, but
sure.
It was, Rare Earth was the headliner, the Doobies were number two, and Steely Dan was the opening act.
Man, would I love to see that show today, right?
Yeah, I would too.
Wouldn't you?
Yeah, and at the end, everybody came out, Jeff Baxter and all these other people came out, and they all played together for about another 45 minutes or something, which made us late, but I was okay with it. It's one time I agreed with Jackson Browne that the roadies don't mind. Most of the time the roadies do mind because they're not getting extra pay. The union stagehands think it's great. You know, but, we're in triple-double golden time, you know?
That's a distinction that I never figured out. I hadn't thought of that. So the traveling roadies are not union, and the people that work in the house in that city, they are, and so they get paid extra. You don't?
Correct.
Ooh, I had never seen. That's a pretty...
It was a sticky wicket.
Sticking point.
It was. Well, we used to do... When I did a lot of Cat Stevens stuff, we recorded the show a lot.
Oh, even back then?
Yeah, even back then.
That was not simple to do back then.
No, it wasn't. And I'd have to...
Expensive, and it's bulky.
Yeah, and we'd have people like Wally Heider and people like that come in with mobile studios, things similar to... Well, our friend Paul Christensen bought one of Wally Heider's trucks, basically.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's where that came from. And they were real pioneers in it, but it was my problem to get everything working. All the hums and ground loops and stuff, which were rampant back then, and interference from lighting consoles. The lights you bring the lights up and everything all bizarre.
In the
PA, real loud. You know, it's really great. You know, and on your recording too. And a few places we went had video installed in the place. I mean, this 1970s, this is pretty hot stuff.
Yeah.
And I'd have to deal with that, giving them audio feeds and stuff.
Wow.
And a lot of those tapes, actually, we carried a 16-track 3M recorder around to record it. And then later we got a 24-track MCI, which did not like the road at all. Neither one liked the road. They just weren't built for that kind of stuff.
No, they weren't built for that.
So eventually with MCI, we had to have special tech. One guy, that's all he did was
fix it after every show.
Yeah, all the circuit boards would fall out of it. You know, we tie wrap them in place. The first time it happened, when we opened up the case, that somebody put it in the truck upside down or something, which was
like
really, really great. And all the circuit boards, there's one for each channel, have all fallen out, and they're not labeled. And, of course, they're all different. So we had to put them back in and hope we got them in the right place.
Oh,
and
no.
So I ended up writing on them with Sharpie markers and stuff, and you know what slot this goes in, because it was otherwise just a lot of fun. But I mean, I had to have one guy that Wild Bill, we called him. He was a Scotsman who, if you've ever heard any of Robin Williams' Scottish imitations,
sure.
The golf game or something,
oh,
he
yeah.
sounded just like him.
Sounded like it, but for real.
Yeah, but for real. Anyway, it was a nightmare, and all those tapes ended up at my shop for a long time. I had 3 or 4 road cases full of them.
Wow.
And finally, I called up Steve after he decided to, he was Yusuf Islam now and no longer performing. I called him up and said, what do you want me to do with all this stuff? Because we're moving to a new building, and I really don't know what to do with them. He said, well, send them to me in London, and I'll put them in my mom's garage. Okay. Later on, PBS finds the missing tapes.
Oh, my God.
They weren't missing. They're in my warehouse for 10, 20 years.
How
you know?
About that?
You know,
that's a great story.
Yeah. So if you watch the PBS Cat Stevens special sometime, if you look off on the side, you can see me just for an instant, but I'm over there.
Doing monitors.
Yeah, doing monitors. Yep.
That's great.
What I did forever.
You're leading me perfectly into something because you've accessed it and referenced it so many times in our little chat here. My line says here, my note, loyalty. Ask Chuck about loyalty in the concert business. And I'm going to lead into that by giving you an anecdote. There was a time when the rock tour business and album sales and everything, play on the radio, was so big that you could book Pink Floyd for 2 nights at, 3 nights at Reunion Arena in Dallas, and one of the nights overlapped with U2 on the Joshua Tree, the hottest band in the world in November of 1987, was playing 2 nights at the Fort Worth Tarrant County Convention Center. And I was very, very busy man myself trying to cover all of this. I've never seen anything like that probably before or since. But you've got two of the biggest bands in the world, both, and there was enough money in the market
mm-hmm.
that everybody was sold out. Nobody
yep.
was
I'm
hurt.
Sure they sold the whole thing out.
Everything, right?
Yep.
So I'm doing a live broadcast from the first night of the U2 at Tarrant County Convention Center in Fort Worth. I'm doing my afternoon radio show on Q102. And I had asked for I had interviewed U2 before, Adam Clayton, the bass player. And he agreed to another interview live that afternoon on my radio show. So I go to walk from the broadcast point backstage, which is like underneath the convention center. And I go to this little anteroom to actually interview U2. But on my way through, I go past this point with the big overhead doors and stuff like that. And there was a box truck inside and backstage.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm walking, I look on the side of the box truck and it says Crossroads Audio. And I'm thinking, Dallas, Texas. And I'm thinking, whoa, this is the mouse that roared. This is the little company. How'd you get a gig like that? It was the hottest band in the world at the time.
Probably through Concerts West or something like that. I bet that's who the promoter was. To be honest with you, I don't remember it. But
I do, though. Okay. That's my point is that I thought, my gosh. And I, the only thing I could, once again, surmise was, maybe these bands were doing with you in the concert of live event industry what they did with somebody like me, and that was the first time I saw U2 live, there were 20 people in the place.
Yeah.
It was a bar in Memphis.
Sure. Nobody knew who they were.
Nobody knew who they were.
Well, we were popular with a lot of British bands or UK-based mostly through Cat Stevens because I spent
really
a lot,
that's so that's the,
yeah I spent a lot of time
way.
In England and I could get along fine in England. In fact, Choco even asked me if I was b- be interested in opening an office,
office in London. In London. Whoa.
And my things would have been a lot different if I'd taken them up on that. They didn't do it, though, when they found out how much it was going to cost.
Yeah.
But
still, they thought
still they thought of it.
Sure.
And I got along with English bands, who were frequently very difficult. It wasn't that they were really difficult, and it was they had a different point of view, a different perspective on things.
Certainly a different sense of humor.
Oh, yeah. But I got along with the British sense of humor pretty well. I think I liked it, to be honest
okay.
with you. I know when I first saw Monty Python, before it ever came to the U.S.
You thought they were hysterical.
Oh, yeah. We stopped everything for Monty Python. You know, it's like, that's what you got to do. In fact, we even rehearsed in a building that they did Monty Python as a stage show.
Cool.
In the West End in London.
Very cool.
And, you know, there's these giant hammers and giant weights that fall down on top of people and things like that. You know, albatross everywhere. You know, albatross? Get your albatross! Yeah. But maybe my sense of humor has something to do with it, frankly.
Probably.
Because I find things to be funny that a lot of people don't think are all that funny.
Okay.
So that might have something to do with it. And I figured there's no point in going away angry or mad with anything. It doesn't get you anywhere, so why bother?
Right.
So if we can make light of this and make everybody happy, then that's good. So I have a feeling that some of it is from that. I used to get strange British bands, especially punk rock ones, wanting us to do something. I remember, ever hear of The Jam? Remember them?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, well.
Paul Weller.
Yeah, well, we were ending up the tour with, I don't know, Bebop Deluxe or...
That was Bill Nelson. That was a great band.
Yeah, they really were.
Played them on the radio a lot.
I think we ended up in Boston, and we went to a bar afterwards to everybody kind of celebrate and say goodbye. And whoever the Jam's road manager was there, and I knew him at the time. I'd met him somewhere else. He said, oh, you got to help us. We're playing at CBGB's. It's that horrible club down the Bowery. And if you just bring your monitor system in, we'll pay you whatever it is. You know, right. And I'll get your hotel rooms and everything. Okay, fine.
Just to do monitors.
Just to do monitors.
DVD.
Yeah, well, you know, there was a dog that lived in there that used that as his bathroom, which was rather interesting. And they did set the stage on fire during the show, which was interesting.
Oh, man.
But the most interesting part of it was when we went to go load out at 3 in the morning or whatever. We had a tractor trailer and had somebody taking the Texas license plates off of it. It was like a souvenir.
As a souvenir.
Yeah, it was parked right in front of the box office of CBGB.
It was probably one of the Brit,
I don't know.
I'll bet.
But obscured from your view was the Jam's Ryder truck, which now had the hood up, the engine was missing, and the wheels were gone. You know.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
Yeah. Can you imagine the phone call? Hello, Ryder. We're having a little problem with your truck.
Yeah, we're having a problem.
Yes, we have a little difficulty with this.
The motor is gone.
This happened. Jeez. You know, whoever's sitting in the box office is obviously able to watch this because it was right in front of the place. You know, it was across Second Avenue or whatever. It was,
New York City was a tough place in the early 80s, and that's when it would have to have been.
Yeah, it was. It was early 80s.
Wow. That's a great story.
Yeah, I think that was the same tour that the Bebop Deluxe ones. They decided to do a February tour of Canada.
Not good routing.
It's like
not good routing.
Well,
somebody didn't do the due diligence on that.
Do you realize that it gets up to zero for the high? I remember one day we were loading out. I think it was London, Ontario, and there's a really nice convention center across the street from a bank. It's got a somebody or other's bank. It's got the time and temperature on the thing. It says minus 42.
Oh, my.
And that was Celsius, I think, but it doesn't matter. I think at
it's
minus
just
40,
freaking
right?
Cold.
Yeah, it was nuts.
That's
geez. We're trying to load a truck. I mean, things are breaking.
I was going to say, how does the truck start? How does anything mechanical?
We couldn't stop it.
The
guy who drove our truck.
I remember hearing about this day.
Yeah, well, I know. I think our first show on that tour was in Montreal, and Aerosmith was on the show. It was Aerosmith and Bebop Deluxe, and they had two tractor trailers, and we had one. And the guy that was driving for us said, I'm not going to shut this thing off. And I protested because it's going to use a ton of diesel fuel.
You want to go home?
He said, if you want us to go somewhere tomorrow morning, it's so cold, this stuff will turn into jello, and you'll never get the thing started until spring. So I reluctantly said, okay.
Good choice.
Yeah, good choice. When we left, it was nice and toasty warm in the cab of our truck, and the guys from Aerosmith are out there with blow torches underneath their truck trying to heating the fuel tanks, trying to get the stuff to run.
They could have blown themselves.
They could have, yeah. I'm surprised they didn't land halfway across Montreal or something. But
that's a wild story.
All kinds of weird stuff like that happened on the road.
How long were you the principal, operator of Crossroads Audio, and when did you begin yet another chapter in your career?
I sold Crossroads Audio in 2000 and worked there until 2001. Robin Magruder, Ed Spoto, and Stuart Bennett, who were all ex-Shoco people, but Stuart actually had been one of our employees at Crossroads when he was in high school.
Wow.
And he was probably one of the best employees we ever had.
Oh, great.
He was a great kid.
Great.
You know, he's like a sponge soaking this stuff up. He loved it. At any rate, they came in one day, and Shoco had just been bought out by Clare Brothers in Lititz, Pennsylvania, and was moving. And apparently they gave everybody choice. You can move to Lititz, Pennsylvania, which is about, I don't know, 50 miles from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, but it's in the middle of nowhere. Or they had a golden parachute for those people who wanted to leave. So apparently they all decided to leave, and they came into the shop one day and said, we'd like to buy your business. And I said, really? You have money? Why, yes, we do. I said, we must talk because I don't have an exit plan. My exit plan here involves a gurney and a white sheet.
Oh, you know? Bless your heart.
So we did, and we worked out a deal. And they bought Crossroads Audio, so it's kind of Shoco Jr. these days. It's still around, too.
I know, and it still has what's impressive, I think, and you should be very proud, is it still has this great panache, this great reputation. Lewis, do you remember as we crossed the street out front today what you told me about Crossroads Audio?
That I used to buy everything from there?
We appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah.
And why did you?
Well, it was the perfect place to go for everything. You got great service, great people. Everybody knew everything about the equipment. There was no reason not to go anywhere else. They were great.
That's what we tried to do. It was a good company. It still is, I think.
Yeah, it is. You know, under Robin's. The two of you, I hope you take this as the compliment it's intended to be, but the two of you remind me almost of brothers. Like you could, I mean, it's amazing that he, you know, took over this thing that was so much, such a personal.
It was very personal. I mean, it was family. Well, it truly
they've
was.
They've extended that feel now when you go there.
Well, that's good. I must admit, I haven't visited them in the last year or two. Since the pandemic, I guess.
Right. Me too.
But they survived the pandemic, which
a lot of people
did not.
Right.
They've still got a good reputation, and maybe Robin and I are twins by different mothers. I don't know.
There you go.
We knew each other at Shoco. I mean, Robin was there when I was, and, he's good at what he does.
Well,
they're all very good at what they do.
Great. What was this next chapter in already an interesting career? Why radio broadcasting history in Texas? And again, what was your business plan this time?
There wasn't one, as usual, but I had been accumulating all this stuff. People kept bringing me things at Crossroads Audio. Start out with microphones. I love microphones. I don't think I've ever met a microphone I didn't like in some weird way. I mean, even if it was horrendous sounding, there's something about a microphone. I've loved them since I was a kid.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. My grandfather gave me one for my 11th birthday, and I've still got it. Nice. You know, it's on display down here somewhere. Nice. No, actually, it's at the office. But anyway, I just was fascinated by microphones from day one. I don't know why. My dad collected old cars. I've inherited that affliction also. And he used to go to these car meets, and there'd be this guy that showed up all the time with with a PA system with some big round trumpet speakers, you know, the ones that are about 3 feet in diameter, and a Bogan amplifier that had a turntable on top of it.
Name.
Probably was screaming 25 watts or something, right. And a microphone, and he'd do the announcements, and he let me talk onto it a few times. That did it. It's like, hooked. Sorry. This is what I like doing. Give me a microphone. I won't shut up, probably, is the biggest problem.
You should have been a DJ.
Yeah, well, I could have. Well, I did that a little bit.
There
you
go.
But shutting me up sometimes is a problem. But anyway, when I moved to East Texas, I've been accumulating all this stuff. I mean, there was an attic over Crossroads, over a lot of the building, over the front part. And I'd been putting this stuff up there. People would bring me TV cameras and, you know, weird mixers and all kinds of stuff. And say,
but why? I mean, to repair?
Just we understand you like this stuff, and I'm going to throw it away. So I remember one guy brought us some cameras. There's one on display downstairs here in the museum. I've got the other one at home still, but he said, I used to be the chief engineer at WSMV in Nashville, and he said, we retired these RCA cameras. I understand you like cameras, and we retired these things about 20 years ago. And he said, I had so much of my life tied up in making these things work I kept them in my garage forever.
Sure.
And he said, but my wife wants to put her car in the garage.
They've been taking up all these
years. So she says they got to go. And I said, well, I'd love to have them, but he said, and I think they work. They did when we took them out of service. And I'm going, oh, I'd kind of like to have those. Because I had a camera in my office as a decoration, along with a gas pump. So, you know,
that's you do have it bad, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah. Well, you should see my house.
Imagine.
Yeah, my office. Anyway, and this is just one of them, but it kind of looks like this.
I love it.
But at any rate, I said, I don't know. You're in Nashville, and I'm in Dallas, and I really can't take the time to go drive to Nashville to get him. He said, that's not a problem. He said, my nephew is going to UT Arlington in the fall. He's got a pickup truck. We'll put him in the truck, and he'll bring him to you.
And this has been happening for decades?
Yes.
People.
And all this stuff gets there. And when I left, I worked for Crossroads for a year, which was kind of awkward, you know, being.
Well.
You know, it worked out. It was fine. Everybody was nice.
They were smart to retain you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I knew where the bodies were buried.
Exactly.
You know,
what not to do.
You know, do not take money from this person under any circumstances because you're going to get screwed.
That's very important.
Yeah, you know, no.
In retail.
From lots of points of view, or promoters that were bad.
That.
You know, because we worked with some that weren't quite the quality of the ones that Choco used, you know. We were kind of a secondary sound company, and some of the people that we worked with were flakes, basically. So, you know, if you want to get paid, don't bother even answering their phone call. And anyway, all the stuff had been accumulating, and Robin says, you're going to have to get this stuff out of here, or we're going to throw it away. So, okay. We were moving. I kept our house in Dallas, and we were building a house out here because we had figured there's no reason to live in Dallas if we didn't own the company. And even though we had a lot of friends in Dallas, it was way cheaper. We looked at the Hill Country, and it was taking off at that time.
The secret was out.
Yeah. So East Texas, I've been here so much of my life that it just kind of made sense.
Totally.
And I had some land here that I built a car barn on for storing cars. So we figured, well, why don't we just build a house on that land too. So that's what we did. And I spent a year moving stuff every weekend. I'd load up my car trailer, which very seldom ever had a car in it. But had a lot of furniture and boxes of stuff. Had boxes of stuff from the first house that we owned that we packed away, and you open up and go, yeah, that's what it says, and close it back up and carry it to the next house. I moved all the stuff over here, and I took pictures of it, and I put it online for whatever reason. I made a website and called it the Virtual Museum.
So the original thing
mm-hmm.
was a virtual museum,
a brick and mortar at all, but it seemed like a good idea, at least to document this stuff, because there was stories with it and things.
That's a pretty good idea.
And, I thought it was at the time.
Yeah.
And one day, I got bored, and I started a radio station. I mean, retirement didn't work for me. I retired technically at age 56 or something like that. It's too soon. And I decided the FCC had an opportunity to file for low-power FM stations. I thought, I don't know, I talked to you about it. There was a frequency allotment in the Longview area years ago. You, Doug Hall, and I talked about this at Celebration, I think.
Wow.
And about putting a radio station on the air out here, because, I mean, radio, when I got out here, it was horrible. I mean, it was, I was used to Dallas radio.
Sure.
And, which was good back then. I don't think it is now, but it was.
But it.
At one point, it was yes, it was pretty awesome.
It's had some great stuff.
And it was. Yeah. And no thanks, you know, thanks to you and a whole bunch of other people like Ron Chapman and stuff like that.
And Lewis.
And Lewis and all these guys that worked their butts off on this stuff. And it was a really quality product. I got out here.
Thank you.
And one day I was listening. I had an office here. I was doing some business out here. And I'm listening to the radio. And they say that, it's going to be fair and sunny today. Going to be just lovely here in East Texas. And then they played a commercial. This is in December for swimming pool safety, to be sure. And it's PSA, to be sure. And make sure your pool is secure so that the little kiddies won't fall in it. You have to have a fence around it now, you know. Now it's swimming season. I'm in swimming season. It's December. And I walk outside, and the temperature had dropped from about 70 down to about 50. I went to lunch. When I came back, it was about 40. And we had a big ice storm that day.
Oh, man. And they just missed it.
There's nobody there.
Oh, there was nobody.
There's nobody there.
Nobody home.
Nobody home. It's like, well, that's really special. I mean, we were without electricity. Some places in Kilgore were without electricity for a week.
Oh,
it was that bad a storm.
That's an emergency.
Yeah, it was bad. I drove back to Dallas, so I wasn't too, and didn't bother me that much, but it was a problem. And I'm thinking, geez, I could do better than that, you know, even just with the PC sitting there. And the FCC had come up with this idea of low power FM for a non-commercial station. And I live near Lake Cherokee, which is a retirement community, basically. It's a private lake. It's the largest private lake in Texas. And it was changing a lot. Now it's mostly $500,000 and up houses. But at the time, it wasn't. You could buy stuff fairly reasonably there. But a lot of people from Dallas and Houston had moved there.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's mostly people from Dallas and Houston that moved there. So I thought, I'm going to see if I can apply for a low-power FM station to cover this lake, which is kind of horseshoe-shaped, and I'm right in the middle of the top of the horseshoe. So even though it's 100 watts, it'll cover the whole lake, and that was my whole idea. Well, that grew into something much bigger. I got the opportunity to move to buy a commercial FM station for pennies on the dollar, because the people that owned it was a group, and they were having ownership issues of too many stations in the market, so they had to get rid of one. So I moved to 100.3 FM. It's not a powerhouse, 3,000 watts, but it's a 500-foot tower. It does pretty good.
Good enough.
Yeah, good enough. And apparently, I program it for people who are older. You know, that was the target, because they were nobody over 30. Nobody wants them, and I don't understand that.
That's never changed.
No, it's never changed.
I've been doing it for over 50 years. That is never changed.
No, they want 18 to 35.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sorry, I'm not 18 or 35.
25 or 54, yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. 54 is about where we start.
Yeah.
But it's an unserved market.
There you go.
Yeah, so, you know,
that's the key.
Hartley PV from PV Electronics once years ago sat me down and said, look, what you got to do is figure out what the other guy's doing and do something different.
Well, that's...
And that's some of the best advice I've ever been given.
Me too.
But it's true.
It seems obvious to people like you and me, but it's not so obvious to everybody.
No, apparently not.
No.
But it worked anyway. And then one day, the people from Town Square Media, the local GM here, called me up and said, how'd you like to buy KDOK? I went, KDOK, that's a real heritage set of call letters, which... He said, I said, isn't that Tyler? He said, no, it's Kilgore now. He said, we used to, the guy, Paul Gleiser, who owned KDOK, gave up the call letters, and he got them the next day and assigned them to this AM station in Kilgore, 1240 AM. He said, corporate says, I got to get rid of it because they don't see any future in AM. Okay. Well, I had three FM translators at the time that were doing nothing. Well, they were rebroadcasting the low power FM station I had to get rid of. I was playing classical music at that point. They weren't doing anything, making any money or anything. So I went, I bet I can put the KDOK AM on those three FM translators. And sure enough, you could. That was okay. And they cover Longview, Kilgore, and Henderson. And he said, I ended up buying KDOK for less than you would for a new car.
Oh, come on.
No. They just wanted to get rid of it. So at any rate, I bought that and turned it into a classic hit station.
Lewis, we need to talk, buddy.
But hey, maybe you want to come out and program this stuff. I don't know. Move to East Texas.
I'm already here. Halfway here.
You're halfway here. So that kind of grew into two formats now.
No kidding.
The QXFM 100.3 is oldies, but it's real oldies.
You know, yeah.
And the classic hits station is KDOK. And then not too long ago, Paul Gleiser, who used to own KDOK, had an AM station that he was trying to sell to some religious group because they wanted to do Bible thumping in Spanish or something. But his deal fell through with the money, and he asked if I wanted to be interested in buying it. And I went, it has an FM translator on a 400-foot tower in Tyler, in the heart of the city. Good coverage.
That town has grown so much.
Oh, it has.
In the time I've been.
It's amazing.
What, 30 years.
It's kind of like Dallas was when I moved to Dallas.
Isn't that interesting?
In many ways.
Yeah.
And I think they think they're Dallas, too, which is the others. And they got traffic, too,
Traffic
Dallas.
Problems now.
Yeah, they do. They do. But anyway, so I ended up buying that and simulcasting KDOK on it. And it's the original KDOK frequency of 1490, which is kind of cool.
That is cool.
And it actually is the oldest station in East Texas.
Wow.
Because it was originally called KGKB back in the 30s. And I've been thinking about changing the call letters back to KGKB, but I just never got around to it. But anyway, it's got an FM translator. So all of a sudden, I have this little radio empire that I run out of my garage.
That's just amazing to me.
And
you make it sound so matter-of-fact. And these things are impossible for mere mortals to even dream about. And you just pull this stuff off. It's really impressive.
It just kind of happened. You know, I really didn't have a plan. Well, I didn't really have a plan, though. I mean, other than just to play originally it was to play my Frank Sinatra records, if you want to know the truth. I mean, that was about what it boiled down to. You know, nobody else was playing them.
Right. Exactly.
Know? What happened to Dean Martin? What happened to Andy Williams? Well, what happened to all these people?
He may have died, but the music didn't.
My theory
sounds
is,
better now than ever.
My theory is that a good song is a good song, doesn't matter when it was written or recorded.
I have to agree with that.
And a bad song is just as bad.
I have to agree with that,
and there's plenty of those, too.
Well, tell me about, I've got to wrap up because I don't want to be rude to Lewis, and we got to drive.
And we've talked forever.
No, this is not. This is interesting. This was the short version. This is the edited version.
Well, the museum.
Tell me about the museum. Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, I had all this stuff. I mean, tons of it. My garage was looking kind of full. It's a big garage. 6,000 square feet.
That's a big garage.
Yeah, well, it's got a third of its office and studio, and the rest of its garage. It's got cars in it. Got a TV mobile unit right at the moment. Yet another one, just what we need. But I met this guy named Warren Willard, who I think you met at lunch.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, well, Warren's been collecting stuff. It's a lady at the post office, one of the clerks at the post office. Chris, one day I was in there buying stamps, and she says, "You know, you need to meet this guy, Warren. He's as crazy as you are." I went, "What do you mean?" He said, "Oh, he's got all kinds of radios and TVs and stuff like that." So I went to his shop. He does aircraft interiors for a living. High-end, you know, nice. He's really great at leather. I mean, he makes Celebration leather look like nothing.
Ooh.
You know, he does really beautiful work. At any rate, so I met him, and we got talking. And he's going, "I don't know what I'm going to do with all this stuff." And I'm going, "I don't know what I'm going to do with all this stuff either. What kind of garage sale is my wife going to have in Chalk Hill, Texas? You know, I mean, we have TV cameras on special, aisle four.
You know, blue light special.
Blue light special on RCA cameras, you know.
That's funny.
But no, it's true. I mean, what are you going to do with this stuff? You know, so we kind of got the idea of, well, maybe we could come up with a museum, but how the heck are we going to do that? And there's an old movie theater downtown Kilgore called the Texan. And it's owned by the city. They foreclosed on it a long time ago. And they'd had a couple of different tenants in there that they were trying to have a lease to purchase plan. And I'm talking cheap, you know, like $100 a year lease, or a dollar even, you know. And one place, they were crazy people that went in there. One guy put a restaurant in the thing and set it on fire, which really improved it a lot. And then the next guy was going to put a nightclub in it. And I know we went to... My wife and I went to an open house they had there, and we talked with the guy for a little while. And my wife comment as she was coming out the door says, "He doesn't have a clue, does he?"
Oh, man.
And I said, "You're right." And he went belly up on the thing. And the city was looking for somebody to take the thing over. Just get it off our hands. Because it's in really bad shape. Pardon me. So... I went to the city manager at the time and said, "I'm interested in seeing what maybe we could put a museum in there." I had visions of making it look like a theater, maybe like the Ed Sullivan Theater, and have dioramas down the side with cameras and videotape machines and stuff like that, and maybe take the balcony and the thing and put more stuff there and in the lobby and things, and be able to use it as a meeting place and stuff. I said, "I have to move." There was a vacant lot next to it. I said, I have to have that space so I could put the Dumont Telecruiser, which...
I have seen.
You've seen. It's the oldest restored TV mobile unit anywhere, as far as I know.
Wow.
1949. Wow. You know, one that's restored that works that's older than that, I'd like to know about it. I know where there's some the same age, but they're not restored. One will never be restored, and the other, the people that have it have decided to just leave it the way it is, which is definitely the cheaper alternative, I can tell you that. But anyway, he said, "Well, could you be open till 10 o'clock every night?" I went... What museum is open till 10 o'clock every night? He said, "Well, it's the entertainment district. Its zone is entertainment, and whoever occupies it has to be open till 10 o'clock at night." I said, "Well, that's crazy. It's still entertainment, but we probably want to go home about 5 or 6, I'm thinking, you know, and maybe only open, you know, for special occasions. We'd be glad to be open if there's something going on, but not on a regular basis." He said, "Well, then you couldn't have it." But he said, "I know a building down the street that I bet I could get... You get a really good deal on, because I know the guys that own it, and they're probably looking for a tax deduction. And since I'd had the low power FM station, I had a nonprofit organization already in place.
I knew it. That two were tied somewhere.
Just happened, and I mean, it was kind of dormant. It wasn't doing anything in particular, but at any rate, I approached the people that owned this, and they said, "Well, yeah." This building looked abandoned. I'd been driving past it for years. It was a car dealership originally. It was a Chevy dealership.
Really?
Built in 1949. We're in the general manager's office right now. This half of it was meant for entertaining Kilgore Rangerettes while they're getting their oil changed. There's a full shower in there. Interesting stories. The place is haunted.
You were being euphemistic. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Well, maybe they were entertaining him. I'm not sure.
Yeah, okay.
You know, new definition of dipstick or something,
okay.
You know. But,
all right.
But anyway, they said they had old cars in it, oddly enough. But they said, well, you know, turned out the guy who was the patriarch of the family had cancer and knew his time wasn't real long. Really nice guy. And the son's also a nice guy. He had all kinds of weird stuff in here. But they said, well... We can make a partial donation. You'll have to come up with some money. But it wasn't so much that... It wasn't a deal breaker.
Yeah.
So we ended up actually owning the building.
Oh, very good.
And that...
That is key.
I've worked with a couple other museums, car museums specifically, and been on their board and stuff. And the way I see they get in trouble is when they don't own their building.
I'm sure you're right.
Because usually somebody will have a great idea. Let's start this museum. We got all this stuff. And they get a brother-in-law deal from somebody or other who's great. It's great until that guy dies
exactly.
Or sells it.
And the
heirs say, well, sorry, you're going to have to pay rent now.
Of course.
rent. We don't need no stinking rent.
Right.
Yeah, they do. So they get thrown out. That's what happened in Dallas. There was a radio museum in Dallas.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was out at Las Colinas for a long time.
I didn't know that.
It was originally in the West End, and the Trammell Crow, the developer, wanted to develop that. So he gave them space out at Las Colinas near Midcom and stuff. And it was a pretty neat museum, but he sold, Trammell Crow Company sold the complex, and the new guy, a guy named Chris Christian, wasn't living up to his last name very much, and he wanted rent. And he ended up taking over the museum and selling off most of its assets.
Oh, gee.
Which is actually where I got some of the stuff. There's a really? Lee Harvey Oswald camera down there that I bought quite by accident for about $100, I think, when they had their big garage sale. I didn't know it was... Had
this
some
was
history to it.
The camera that did the.
It was there when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot. It's one of two that KRLD had there. And I bought it because I worked at KRLD. That was
not
the only
because
reason.
Because of the historical.
I had no idea.
You didn't know when you bought it?
None. None whatsoever. The sixth floor museum, because I put the stuff online, saw the pictures of it, and they said, "We understand you got a camera from KRLD." I said, "Yeah, I do. I used to work there." And he said, "Do you know what it did?" I said, "Church services on Sunday morning, maybe, you know, that's what it was doing when I was there. We had a color mobile unit, but it did the Cowboys."
It was a Sunday morning.
Yeah, well, it was, actually. But this camera was, there were four cameras on that mobile unit, and two of them were at the trademark where Kennedy was going to speak. And when all hell broke loose, they just left them there because I think they were up on scaffolding and they had wiring, you know, the big camera cables and stuff.
Called
they,
everybody
they just
back
left
in.
Cameras one and sure. two there, unplugged them, said, "We'll come back and get them
later."
And took the other two, three and four, to the police headquarters. Camera four is downstairs here. Camera three is finally shown up after all these years. Just recently, it was in a fine arts auction in Dallas last year.
I think I saw it.
And
in the
sixth floor museum bought it.
Yeah.
They paid a lot of money for it.
I'm sure they did.
And it's not as nice as ours, but anyway.
That's amazing.
But this just happened. I mean, this is just stuff just happened.
It was,
you know,
your good fortune.
And yeah, I've been very fortunate in life, frankly.
You've had a really, really interesting career. And I just got to say thank you for everything you've done for me and certainly Q102 for all those years. I was there 15 years. And you know, you helped us... pull off things that were really beyond our reach without you. And you're always just a pleasure to work with. And some of my best friends in life I've met, you know, that worked on your crew. Mm-hmm. And I mean, these things are invaluable. So I have to attribute it, though. The Chinese have a saying about 5,000 years old, and it says, "The fish stinks from the head." And, of course, the inverse of that is true. So, apparently, you treated people really well, and that attracted really good people to you. And the thing that I wrote down, I'll show you in my notes here, was there was this continuity, and it had to do with loyalty, that the people that you supported when they were, like, when I met the Police, the band, the Police, they were touring not in a box truck, not in a bus. They were in a station wagon, and and I interviewed them, and I was playing Roxanne and on the radio and stuff. And, you know, when they were one of the biggest bands in the world, they remember those things, and I got the access. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not why I interviewed him the first time, but these are the things that happen. And that's when I saw Crossroads at the U2 show, and they were so hot, and then the Rattle and Hum movie comes out, and your recordings are in the movie, they're on the album and all that. And I'm thinking, you know, he probably did a show when 30 people showed up on the first album, on the Boy album, they remember, you know, they dance with the one that brung them.
That's true, and that really has been the case on a lot of this stuff, because, you know, if somebody was good to you and you got along well with them, and everything's fine, why change, you know, for a starter?
It wouldn't make sense, but people do. I'm just saying
do. It usually has to do with money.
It usually has to always do with money.
There's usually an accountant somewhere in the...
Right.
That
we can do it cheaper.
Yep. There's an accountant and an attorney who can take... You get two people who want to make a deal, and you get an accountant and an attorney that will screw it up.
Hey, Lewis.
You can count on that.
Lewis,
how many DJs does it take to change a light bulb?
How many?
Four. One to change the light bulb and three on the guest list. Chuck, thank you so much for a really fascinating day. Again, you're surrounded, I noticed, by...
good people.
Good people still. You're still attracting good people here at the Texas Broadcast Museum in Kilgore. And this is a kind of a place where, you know, I got to come back. It's just my second time here, and I've just scratched the surface. So I want to encourage people to, it's worth the trip. It really is. You've done an unbelievable job.
It's a one-of-a-kind thing. I mean, we're friends with several other museums that have helped us. I mean, it's amazing how other museums, this is not a contest between museums.
Right.
We try to help each other.
That's good.
And I'm actually on the board of one of other,
that's,
one, you know, which is even weirder.
Good.
I missed a meeting, apparently. I literally did miss a meeting and all of a sudden found out I was on their board, but that's all their story, you know.
Thanks,
yeah,
buddy.
It's great to get an email that says, we'd like to welcome our new board members, Chuck Conrad, and so on.
And you're reading it.
What?
Oh, crap.
What are you talking about?
Thank you so much. And we need to do this again. We just literally just scratched the surface.